Hello and welcome back to Talking Europe. Deadly floods in Spain and in Central and Eastern Europe, devastating hurricanes in the United States are just some of the recent potent reminders of global climate change. World leaders are huddling in Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, with the stated goal of stepping up climate action and offering more protection to those affected by this global emergency. The COP29 is being called the Finance COP because of the growing needs of developing countries in particular, and that's where Europe could play a significant part. Meanwhile, the EU appears to be stumbling on its own path towards net zero by 2050 amid different competing political demands on this continent. And now, of course, Europe facing a new political storm, the return to the White House of Donald Trump, who will likely re-withdraw from the landmark Paris Climate Agreement. Well, to discuss all of this, I'm joined by two participants in the European Parliament's delegation to COP29, Portuguese MEP Lídia Pereira, who is the chair of that delegation, and she's from the European People's Party. Welcome to you. And I'm also joined by German Green MEP Michael Bloss, who is the spokesperson for the Group of the Greens on climate and industrial issues here at the European Parliament. Welcome to you too, Michael.
Thank you.
So, Lídia, first of all, this election of Donald Trump, it's a massive curveball for COP29, isn't it? Because whatever the US agrees under the current administration, it could all be reversed in a few months.
Yeah, well, thank you for the invitation, first of all. And we are still, you know, in the process of digesting the news that come from the other side of the Atlantic. It's obvious that it poses some challenges in what regards the climate compromise, the climate commitment to neutrality and to the Paris Accord. But I, until it is more visible or more evident how the next administration will function, I will prefer to be a bit more reserved, because I do believe in diplomacy. And I know that we have seen, I didn't follow the campaign, like I followed some things, but not every day. I know that the speech, the discourse is very polarized in the US, but there's one thing I know, that when there was the possibility for reverse the effects of inflation in the American economy, it opened a huge window of opportunity for clean tech. So if the Americans see that decarbonization has a business model or has a business case, I do believe that they will be always on board for, you know, undergoing such decarbonization and with the objective of climate neutrality. So I don't want to rush into deriving any conclusions. I know that the past speaks against my hopes.
Donald Trump and EU climate action, how bad is he for the EU's climate policy?
Yeah, I'm not at all reserved. I think the world changed significantly. I think that Donald Trump said, drill, baby, drill. He wants to continue with the fossil extraction. He will get out of the Paris Accord. So now it's with Europe to step up the game. You said it yourself. Mm. We have devastated floods. We had wildfires in Portugal, floods in Germany and Austria. So the climate crisis is here. And if the US is not there, it's Europe who has to be the leaders. And that means we have to be more courageous. That means, for instance, agreeing on a climate target of minus 90% for 2040 to step up our game. And it means for me that you said world leaders would go to the climate conference, but they are not. I think the European leaders, so von der Leyen, Scholz, Macron, they should all go to the climate conference and give a sign, we are here and we will continue with the climate protection.
And on specific European goals, you've said that on climate finance, the 100 billion a year, which the EU is committing to, that that's not nearly enough to help those who are most exposed.
Exactly. I mean, the 100 billion a year was from 2009. Now we are talking more about trillions. And my problem is that the European Union and Hoekstra, our climate commissioner, is basically not taking the responsibility he has. We need to step forward. Europe now needs to put money on the table and says, yes, we are going to commit to solve the financial issues in order to get to CO2 reductions globally, but they're saying, on we wait for China, we wait for the US.
On this, I have to disagree with Michael.
But he's a lead. He's applying to be a leader.
His performance last year at COP was very, very relevant to the outcome of the COP, which we always know that it's never exactly according to our expectations, but it was a good deal because it was included in the text, our concerns about the phasing out of fossil fuels, and it was because of Wopke and in the negotiations that he basically blocked the negotiations until the text moved a bit more in the line with the European priorities. But I do believe that, I mean, Europe has been one of the major contributors in climate financing. And I think it is time to step up the game for countries that are still regarded as developing countries, as China, and that are not taking responsibility. And they have a lot of responsibility, even from the geopolitical perspective, with the influence that they have in some of the most vulnerable countries. I'm not saying this to take away the responsibility of Europe of being a leader. Not that, because we are the ones in the world that know how to fight climate change, how to actually apply a different model, go from linear economy to circular economy, going through the decarbonization. So we have a plan, we have a strategy, we know how to do it. But the others have to understand that they have to follow, because we cannot keep the burden for ourselves and carry the burden on our shoulders alone.
Yeah.
And alone, I'm sorry, Michael, I know that you have a different view on this, but alone, and this has to be reasonable, alone we cannot fight climate change. Mm. I'm sorry. It's time for the other geographies in the world to step up the game as well, particularly China, India, Saudi Arabia, and as well, obviously, US and Japan.
You want to respond to that, particularly on China should be stepping up at this COP?
They have.
You know, leadership for me is not about saying the others should do it. Leadership for me is
saying
we have to do it.
I didn't say
that. And leadership for me means also for the EPP, for my conservative friends, to say, okay, the scientific advisory board said that the EU's climate goal should be -90% for 2040, to also support that. That, I think, would be the leadership where then we could say to the others and say, look, we are doing something. What are you doing? I think that should be the leadership we need.
As we're talking about fossil fuels, we've had COPs hosted by Egypt, by Dubai, and now Azerbaijan. When you've got COPs hosted by either petrostates or autocratic countries, does that give you a fundamentally different result on the climate outcomes than if it was hosted by Portugal or Germany, Michael?
Absolutely. I mean, basically, you're like asking the wolf, to guard the sheep. That is what's happening. It's a fossil autocracy, Azerbaijan, and the regime of Aliyev takes its power resources from selling fossil gas and fossil oil. They even want to drill more. So they have zero interest in transitioning away from fossil fuels. They also didn't show any kind of initiative beforehand to go in this direction.
Renewable, increasing their renewable capacity by 30%. Maybe you don't really get very convinced by this sort of goal, but they did say that they were going to do that.
I mean, they want to sell more gas and oil to us. And this is, I mean, the technology they use to suppress the people, to survey the people, to narrow down the press freedom is basically financed by fossil oil and fossil gas. So it's a system in itself. And this regime now is the presidency of the climate conference that has to propose the compromises, that has to do the negotiations with all of the parties, and that has to do the schedule of the negotiations. That will not work. So COPs, climate conferences, must not be in such fossil autocracies. I think then we would be much further with the climate protection than we are right now.
Do you agree with that, that it won't work with a host that is a fossil state?
It's evident that it's not the best scenario. The thing is, we cannot choose with the people. If we want to fight climate change and if this is a global challenge, I cannot pick the ones with whom I want to deliver on such objective. And so I think we should be obviously always vigilant about these matters. But to fight climate change, we need everyone's on board, everyone's on the table. In the practical terms, in the procedural terms, there might be what Michael is bringing up. But I remain a convicted multilateralist, and
a convinced multilateralist,
and I think this is the right forum, regardless of the, you know, the cons that we see. But it is important that we sit everyone on the table.
We have a picture on this set of Guba Dibadolu, who was one of the three finalists in this year's Sakharov Prize, nominated by MEPs. Obviously, a human rights campaigner from Azerbaijan. Are both of you going to be raising the issue of people like him when you're there, or is it not the right moment or the right time, or how would you see that, Lydia?
Well, in my capacity as president of the head of delegation, I will, you know, abide by the institutional representation of the parliament. So I will be conducting the meetings, and I will be in close cooperation with all the colleagues. And obviously, as I said, being vigilant about things that are obviously politically uncomfortable.
So I think it should be us, our delegation, who is really pressuring that he will be able to travel, because it's not only about him receiving, you know, the honors, but also he is in a very difficult stage with his health. He needs surgery, heart surgery, and the Azerbaijani regime is not allowing for him to travel, because he actually is not only a human rights activist, but he put the finger there where it really hurts. He said the fossil system is constituting the autocratic regime. And then they put him into prison. He should have taken up a job in Germany. We want him to be free. I already talked to the German foreign ministry about it. And I think it should be our job as the parliamentarians that he will be here to receive the honours.
We'll end it there. Thank you so much for this lively discussion, Lydia Pereira and Mikhail Bloss. And that's all for this edition of Talking Europe. Glad you could join us.